There is this thing. Do you realize
what is there is this thing?
Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing
on.
There is this thing going on.
What
do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news I'm brought to you live.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print. This is CKUT on 90.3 FM, broadcasting live from Montreal. I'm Amy Lloyd.
And I'm Maya Bitson.
Today we broadcast from the Geojiage, the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabe Nations. The time now is 5:01.
This week we have two interviews for you. First, we have an interview with Concordia Professor Sandy Curtis, who works in music therapy. This past September, Professor Curtis hosted a launch for the release of her new book, Music for All Women, Survivors of Violence, a Feminist Music Therapy Interactive eBook. We spoke with Curtis about the cognitive science behind music therapy, the male-dominated nature and patriarchal narrative that exists within the music industry, and the empowerment that results creative outlets. We want to issue a trigger, as this interview does discuss topics of violence, specifically against and sexual violence. In light of National Mental Health Day, which just passed, we wanted to also play an old interview with artist Maya Sharon. In the summer, we spoke with Maya about creating her first zine, along with hosting her very first event as well. Maya's zine, titled Lonely Alone, includes the artwork of her and several other artists. The event occurred in May, according to Maya's event page, the zine, quote, is a collaborative project involving the work of 17 different artists and contributors. Its content explores notions of loneliness and being alone, both as a negative and as a positive, unquote.
Thank you. The summer's moving faster now. Your room was a disaster. Fell in love without a mattress. Hell, sticking to the fabric.
Put you above me. You always like coming out on top of things. As much as you hate losing, I hate the sound of your voice when you get on the defensive. Got me sitting on the fence now. Love me as much as you love coming out on top of things, yeah. Oh, if I really deserve this, all this shade from you. Tell me why you get so nervous, why you playing like we perfect. There's no way I could believe you now. This should be more than a friendship. Why you get so defensive? Faster now, your room was a disaster. Fell in love without a mattress. How? Sticking to the fabric.
That was Norton Commander, All We Need by Men I Trust, followed by Heated Up by Chris LaRocca. The time now is 5:09. Now it's time for our weekly headline roundup. Anastasia Dudley, the operations manager of Park Avenue's Open Door Homeless Shelter, resigned last week, warning that the shelter was heading in a dangerous direction. Dudley's resignation was followed by a slew of staff lost at Open Door, to the point where the lack of employees at the shelter means it's unable to be managed safely. This past June, the shelter's director was fired for insubordination and hasn't been replaced. Since the shelter, staff have been subjected to, quote, instances of violence, unquote, according to Dudley, leading to employees diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder and other traumas from physical assault. The lack of employees allows for longer, more strenuous shifts with limited breaks. In efforts of improvement, the shelter has instituted a policy where there can't be fewer than 3 people working at a given time, and the shelter staff have been given Omega conflict de-escalation training. With 150 or so regular clients, Open Door provides food and clothing, laundry services, shelter during the day, counseling, referrals to professional mental health services, and more.
On Thursday, Quebec's junior health minister, Lionel Carmont, announced that the province will appeal a September Quebec provincial court ruling that overturns the province's ban on homegrown marijuana. Judge Manon Lavoie stated that provisions of the law banning home growing are unconstitutional as they infringe on the jurisdiction of the federal government, which has sole responsibility of legislating on criminal matters. This allows for Quebecers to grow a maximum of 4 cannabis plants at home for now. The original law, passed in June 2018 under the previous Liberal government, detailed and allowed for the government-regulated sale of cannabis but banned any home growth. A spokesperson for Carmont said that the government is studying Lavoie's September 3rd ruling and plans to appeal.
Opposition City Councillor Marvin Rotrand is adding his voice to minority groups in calling on Montreal to hold an emergency hearings on racial profiling. In an open letter published Thursday, he called on Executive Committee member Rosianne Filato to mandate the Public Security Committee to hold public hearings in the wake of a recent study published showing that Black, Indigenous, and Arab people are more likely to be stopped by Montreal police than white people. Though the Montreal mayor, Valerie Plante, has called this report, quote, shocking, unquote, the city has also been resistant in holding public meetings regarding the police behavior. The most formal action been taking to resolve this issue has been by Provincial Public Security Minister Jean-Louis Guilbault, who said Quebec's police forces will be mandated to complete seminars on racial and social profiling.
As of 10 a.m. this past Monday, 3,300 evacuees from 14 different Manitoba Indigenous communities have registered with the Red Cross organization, who is providing support during a major snowstorm there in Winnipeg. This storm is forcing many First Nations peoples out of their communities, some of which had not had power for 72 hours. The Red Cross has said that many of the rescued peoples are staying with family and friends in the Winnipeg area. However, the Red Cross has also set up a shelter in the RBC Convention Center, which is prepared to house up to 1,000 people. The response is part of a joint effort from the Canadian Red Cross and the federal government to provide disaster assistance to First Nations in the province.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print. The time is 5:15. That was Gazing by Winona Forever. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 in Montreal.
Now it is time for our interview with Professor Sandy Curtis. As mentioned earlier, Professor Curtis released her book, Music for Women, Survivors of Violence, a Feminist Music Therapy Interactive eBook, in September, just before retiring. We spoke with Curtis about the cognitive science behind music therapy, the male-dominated nature and patriarchal narrative that exists within the music industry, and the empowerment that results creative outlets. Once again, we want to issue a trigger, as this interview does discuss topics of violence, specifically against and sexual violence.
Professor Curtis, it's Amy from CKUT.
Hi, Amy.
So firstly, would you mind explaining to listeners what realm of academia you work in?
Yes, my area is actually music therapy.
And what inspired you to enter said sector of academia?
Well, when I was younger, I was looking at performance, and it didn't connect with me in the way I wanted to connect with people, so I learned about music therapy. That was back in the late 70s, and I just love the fact that you had a potential as a music therapist to really have an incredibly important impact in people's individual lives.
And what was, like, your first memory when you began exploring that distinct connection between music and therapy?
Well, and it's funny, the relationship is so different when you're on stage and connecting with an audience. You're not really connecting with them. Whereas when I started doing therapy, there I was, just me and one other person. My first experiences were in palliative care, so people with life-threatening illnesses. And there, connecting with them, making music with them, and building a relationship where we were able to explore how they might use music to improve their lives in therapy.
So, in an article with Concordia News, you discussed how women struggle being heard in the music industry. Does the male-dominated nature of the music industry negatively or positively contribute to the therapeutic experience of music making as a woman?
Well, I would say the male-dominated nature definitely has a negative impact, and a powerful one at that. However, what I do recognize is that we have an incredible wealth of strong women singer-songwriters now that are putting music out there, so they are able to be the subversive voice and challenge the status quo and challenge those messages that we see, stereotyped visions of women. And so the women are challenging that, and then the listeners bring that into their own lives when they listen to these women. So that's a very positive, powerful impact, both in therapy, but I also think in just everyday women's lives. When you go out listening to music and you hear these fabulous women singer-songwriters performing.
So you released your ebook this September titled Music for Women, a Feminist Music Therapy Interactive eBook. Would you mind summarizing the topics in which you covered in the book?
Yeah, and actually the title, full title, it's a lengthy one, I'll admit, is Music for Women, and then in brackets, Survivors of Violence. And I put that in brackets because I really firmly believe and want people to understand that all women are affected by male violence. And so the book itself looks at not just the male violence and what our culture is made up and how it works that we have such powerful violence against women, but also in our daily lives. So what is the meaning of gender? How does it play out in our relationships with men, in our intimate relationships, in work? How does it play out in power, in empowerment, and then ultimately all of those threads that feed into, that underpin violence against women? So the book is written originally for three groups of readers, music therapists who can learn to do a better job working with women survivors, but also for other healthcare professionals working with survivors, and ultimately for everyday women, so that you can decide that if you just want to read the book and see how that can change your understanding of our culture and what it means in your life, or if you want to take it a little, if you feel like you want to do therapy and take it a little deeper, then you can, it gives you directions on how to find a music therapist. The book is a combination of both readings and music listening, so the interactive ebook part of it is that there's direct links to the performing artist's music videos. over, you know, tons of music that you can actually listen to and see how what they say about our culture and about ourselves as women, and then how you can internalize that yourself and make some sense and meaning of it in your own life.
And would you mind talking about the artists you featured in the ebook as examples? Which artists did you pick and why then?
Yeah, and I got over 200 songs, which is a lot, I think, and yet I've only got 200 songs because there's so many that I would have loved to also include if you had to draw a line somewhere. I tried to have as much diversity both in the types of music, the decades of music, and also in the women's voices themselves. So I've got music there from probably the mid-1980s up until 2019. Everything from rap and hip-hop and to country, to pop, to rock and roll, all, you know, indie music. I've tried to get as much diversity as I possibly could. I chose specifically only women singer-songwriters because when working with women in therapy myself, I find they're better able to hear their own voices and their own stories when they hear another woman singer-songwriter singing. They're able to make it their own. And when we listen to music, we project onto that music. We take in and we hear, okay, this is a woman talking about her life, of her experience of violence, and maybe it's not an individual problem. It's really important. Strong and powerful women have it, that as well. But also then we can actually begin to hear our own stories, and then we put onto that music our experiences and what it means to us. So as much diversity as I possibly could was my goal.
So this book was the last chapter in your career. What has been the most powerful moment for you, either after or in the midst of writing the ebook?
Well, I've had a long academic career, and I've had a lot of academic publications, research publications. But this one was so important to me. It was much more close to heart because for me, it was my effort to bring the information I had and what I've learned from working with women survivors out to the everyday world, so that I've been working with women behind closed doors because, of course, for their safety and confidentiality, that was essential. But I got to thinking, gee, you know, so many other women need to hear about this. And so that's what made it very special for me, that I'm getting it out to a broader sort of popular audience.
And so, as mentioned earlier, you launched the book, or you released the book in September. So what was the response to your launch party?
It was very positive. And again, I'm always surprised, but music therapy it's still a new kid on the block, but it's been around in Canada since 1970, so it's not that new. But it's so delightful and so satisfying for me to begin to help increase public awareness of what music therapy is and what powers it offers and what potential it offers for healing.
Do you think that music as an accessible and maybe possibly inexpensive form of therapy can be overlooked by, you know, like society as a form of therapy?
Yeah, and I touched upon that in my last answer. It absolutely is this wonderful but well-kept secret, and music therapists are trying very hard to spread the word, but it's taking some while. I think we're sort of on a cusp of people realizing it. You know, it's not like medicine that you prescribe and put in a glass and swallow, but this music medium is like it's everybody's language. There's not a single person who doesn't have some kind of music in their lives, and so we really need to help people not overlook it and become more aware of what it is and what it can do.
And how will increasing female voices in the music industry shift the socio-political narrative regarding gender-based sexual violence and violence in general?
Yeah, and I think how is it? Because we are now seeing more than ever this, you know, I think when I started, you know, focusing in back in 2013 and you know, say, well, this is the year of women's empowerment in music, and then the next year, this is women's year. And so we really are seeing an incredible growth of more women's voices in the music industry, and they are really telling their own story rather than having men tell their stories. The industry is still a little over-dominated by men in the areas of producers and whatnot, so sometimes some of the videos are still, you know, using women as eye candy and that kind of thing, but I think more and more our women's voices are challenging that in the music that they write, you know, from powerful singers like Lizzo to Lady Gaga, Beyonce. They are really sending out their own voice into the world. So not just changing the music industry, but the actual entire socio-political landscape.
And you touched on this a bit earlier, but I want to go back to it. So how did you approach, the topic of intersectionality when it came to covering artists? How did you ensure that, you know, the message that you were sending out was both intersectional and diverse?
Yeah, and I wrote the book from an intersectional feminist lens. Mm-hmm. So, and as a single author, it's really hard. You have your own lens from which you see. So that's why I wanted to bring as many different diverse voices as I could. But not only the music, the book itself throughout looks at the issues from an intersectional point of view. So when I look at women's relationship, their intimate relationship, I look at the full scope from women of color to the LGBTQ community. And I wanted to put that throughout and made an effort to put that throughout every aspect of the reading the writing I was making, as well as then bringing in, you know, music from, you know, Andra Day, Beyonce, Aquafina, as well as diverse, not only American singer-songwriters, but also diverse Canadian singer-songwriters. So that was my aim, and I hope that this first book will have done as best a job as a single person could, and I hope that others will follow, and other diverse women's voices will, or diverse women will take to writing further on this.
So what is the cognitive science behind music as therapy?
Yeah, and that's a huge question. Not only just the cognitive science, but the biomedical as well. Mm-hmm. There's a huge, vast amount of research in the area, and for those who really want to delve into it, I would suggest they go to the website musictherapy.org. What I can say briefly in a very short interview is that the interesting thing about music is when we listen to it and we make music as well, that it affects us not only physically, but also cognitively, emotionally, spiritually, all at the same time. So it's deeply entwined and deeply enmeshed, and therefore what it evokes from us is a very rich and complex response. So that to say, that's why music is such a powerful tool for therapy, and then I would just tell people to go to musictherapy.org if they want to learn more about the tons and tons of research that's out there.
And how does your book combat the repeated narrative of violence and degradation towards women displayed in popular music?
Well, I picked music, first the music itself, which challenged that. And so there, you know, the songs like, you know, Lady Gaga's Till It Happens to You, but there's so many, many songs, even, you know, Jan Arden's Not Your Little Girl. There's a huge array. So we listen to the music, but we also analyze it and analyze the lyrics. And also every chapter has some my writing that challenges that looks at, here's what the status quo is, here's where it comes from, here's where we need to challenge it, where we need to go if we want to move away from what some people call a rape culture. Rape culture is a nice catchword. It captures an idea, but it's much more than just rape. It's that all the violences of male violence against women are all interconnected, from rape to sexual harassment to battered women to street harassment. They're all interconnected, and they're all the underpinning of a culture that looks at women as devalued, as objectified, as less than. And so, book readings look at all of that, and then bring in the music that reflects that.
And what is this, what's special about the medium of an interactive ebook? How will that contribute to the therapeutic experience?
Well, it's just, I'm so delighted to actually have an interactive ebook so that it's not just a book writing about music. It's actually where you have a chance to immediately choose what music you want to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
So you can click on it and do the reading and then listen to the music. And then you can choose if you want something, you know, from your perspective, from your culture, then you can go in. The book has a listing of all the songs by the performing artists, by their by the musical style, by the issues. So you could be looking at, you know, say I want to listen to something by a particular singer-songwriter, a Canadian singer-songwriter about women's empowerment, or I want to listen to what another woman has to say about domestic violence. So you can pick and choose, and then you can go and listen to it and then read the writings about the topics.
And lastly, what are some sources or even centers that you would suggest for survivors of violence?
Yeah, and there's a lot that are really out there, and people need to be aware of them. What I would suggest is that I have on my website a free film that's available to anybody called Beyond Me Too, and it as the closing credits includes lists of support services in Montreal, in Quebec, and the rest of Canada and the United States. So if people want to go to that, it's sandycurtis.wixsite.com/mysite. And also, of course, resources listed in my book, which is available at barcelonapublishers.com.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with us today, Professor Curtis.
My great pleasure. It was lovely chatting with you.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print. Thanks again to Professor Sandy Curtis for speaking with us. If you are interested in her work, you can find her book online. Once again, the book is titled Music for Women, in brackets, Survivors of Violence, bracket close, colon, A Feminist Music Therapy Interactive Ebook. If you are interested in music therapy as a whole, check out the site www.musictherapy.org. We will also share the link on our Twitter page, search for Unfit to Print. We're going to play a couple of tunes, but do not go anywhere because we'll be right back with another interview.
Is that the way that you wanna be loved?
Welcome back to Unfit to Print. The time now is 5:39. That was Way to Be Loved by Tops, followed by Island Groovies by Makeup Videotape. You're listening to CAKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Now it is time for our interview with Maya Sharon. Last May, Maya hosted her first zine event, where she and several other artists explored the theme of loneliness. We talked with Maya about her strategy as a young artist for ethical collaboration. We also discussed the importance of exploring and appreciating the duality loneliness has to offer. Hello. Oh yeah, hi, it's Amy from CKUT.
Hi.
Do you want to just dive into the interview, or do you want to, like, go over anything first?
No, I think we can just dive right in.
Okay, perfect. So what inspired you to launch this zine event?
Well, it's actually a kind of sweet little story. I was on a bus coming back from Toronto, and I had just gone through a breakup with my partner, and I was sitting next to a man, and we started chatting, and he moved to Montreal from India about 6 years ago, and he was saying that he was still having a really hard time adjusting to the culture, and I started talking to him about that a bit, and one thing he said really struck me, and he said, here everyone is lonely because they choose to be, and so that really got me starting to think about how loneliness could be a choice and not just a state of being, and I wanted to do something to explore that notion a little further.
So in the description for your event, you described the both positive and negative side of loneliness. Why is it important to address both these sides?
I mean, once I started thinking about loneliness as a choice, I just started thinking about reasons why someone might choose to be alone or to kind of revel in this feeling of loneliness. And I realized that there was actually a bit of a power to it if you just change your way of thinking about it and think of it as independence rather than loneliness.
And so it was a collaborative effort. So how did you go about selecting other artists to work with?
Initially, I just put out a post on my social media accounts, but then I just asked people to share that and tried to spread it by word of mouth. I just really wanted to make sure that it was open to anyone who felt like they had something to contribute. So, that was difficult because I didn't have the best platform to do that, but I just wanted to make sure that I put it out there and got as many people interested as possible.
And why was collaboration important for you instead of maybe creating a solo project?
For me, I wanted to go down the collaboration route just because I was feeling a little intimidated by creating something solo, and I felt like working with people would make me feel more comfortable and would be a really interesting opportunity to be able to share in a project, and especially with the theme of loneliness, it felt appropriate to be working with people and bringing people together.
So you also partook in the zine making, and I was just wondering, how would you describe your artistic style and its structure, and how did it differ from the other artists involved?
So my idea with it was, I wanted to go down a kind of like scrapbooky vibe. I wanted it to look kind of thrown together, immediate, really personal. So I tried to create something that looked handmade, even though I was doing it all digitally. So I put the images at slight angles. I created ink drawings that were then digitalized to give it just kind of this like immediate scrapbooky look.
And so you talked about reaching out via social media, and I was wondering, how is Montreal as a city accessible for students and artists in terms of creative collaboration?
I found in Montreal, I'm pretty new here, I moved here 3 years ago, and I found as a city, it has a really strong sense of community, and there's so many opportunities for artists to come together. There's like co-ops, there's collaborative workspaces, and I've also just found that in general, people are really interested in working together and creating projects and events together here, so that's been really nice.
And so you talked about why it was important for you to explore loneliness, but I was wondering, how did you find it therapeutic at all after your breakup with your partner? Did it help you kind of come to terms with what you were experiencing?
I definitely found, the main thing is I found that I was just always around people and I was with my partner a lot, and then suddenly I had all this alone time. And I wanted a project to fill that time, but then it ended up being really therapeutic because, first of all, just creating art is really therapeutic, but also it gave me a chance to connect with people and talk to people about their experiences with loneliness and talk about it in a positive way, where we're talking about the ways that that can be beneficial and how independence is a strength.
So would you mind discussing the other artists featured in the event and the type of work they brought forward and how it helped you maybe with your own work?
So I ended up having 15 artists submit work to the zine, And there were artists from kind of all over, but basically the cities that I've lived in the past, because I was only able to promote it via my social media. So I had artists from Victoria, Vancouver, and the Gulf Islands, and then some artists from Montreal, Toronto, and also from Berlin. And they're from all different age groups. And yeah, it was, yeah, I guess I basically just tried to open up the doors to anybody who wanted to be part of it.
And how did you ensure that there was diversity in terms of stories, perspectives, and style?
I didn't really have a method to ensure that, but I just felt that by keeping it open and not really turning anyone away who wanted to be part of it, I was able to ensure a pretty decent amount of diversity. And because people knew that I was interested in exploring both sides of it, I had people coming to me with kind of different stories and different angles.
Mm-hmm. So for promoting your event, you used a poster with the words lonely and alone next to each other. And I was wondering, is there an intended message behind this? And what was the purpose of putting those two words next to each other?
Yeah, so I named the zine Lonely Alone and used that for promotional purposes. I wanted to do that in order to emphasize that kind of choice and duality between alone as a state of being and loneliness as more of a choice and something that you could step out of if you chose to. And so I just wanted to look at the two sides of it again, looking at that negative and positive aspect of loneliness and being alone.
And what was the response to the event?
Overall, it was really positive. There was a pretty good turnout. People seemed to be enjoying themselves. And it was also just a really beautiful opportunity for people to come together and talk about their experiences with loneliness and also talk about their creative projects and, just share in talking about art.
So kind of going on to this question, this is related to what you just said. How can zine as a medium bring unity for a feeling that is quite isolating?
I think that the zine medium is really great in that way because it's such a casual platform. So I think that people feel less intimidated to kind of jump in and throw in their different abilities and different mediums to that, especially because with a zine you can have writing, you can have art, you can have photography. So it's a really good way for people to collaborate.
And when did you first discover that zines were an artistic medium that you connected with?
This is my first time making a zine, but I've been interested in the medium for a while, and I really just wanted to give it a shot and try it out. I think I'll probably end up making some more, so this is a learning experience for me.
And what were some personal highlights of the event?
For me, it was the conversations I had with people. I found people were sitting down and reading the zine and then would come to me and talk to me about certain parts of it or certain pieces of writing that they had just read. And it opened up so many interesting conversations about loneliness. So for me, that was definitely a highlight.
Were there any things that you wish you could have changed or done differently?
If I was to do this again, I'd really just want to find a way to open up my submission process to more people. I felt like it was a little bit narrow considering I was only reaching out to friends and friends of friends. And it was difficult to open it up to the public. And for me, that would be really interesting to be able to reach out a little further.
And I was wondering, in terms of selection, did you have a preference with age for both the consumers and the creators of the event?
There's definitely no preference. I found, in general, a lot of the people ended up being around my age. So there's a lot of people in their 20s submitting, but I also had some older people submitting, some younger people submitting. And in terms of consumers, again, it ended up being a similar age group, but of course the event was open to anyone, and we did have some people from different age groups showing up too, so that was great.
And did that variety within age kind of help create a new perspective on loneliness or how loneliness can be so diverse?
I think it really did. One of the submissions I had for the zine, it was a couple poems, childhood poems, about loneliness, which I thought was really beautiful. And it kind of, it showed that, you know, kids feel lonely, adults feel lonely, everyone in between feels lonely at times. And it just helped to share a lot of different perspectives.
So you talked about how, like, the idea first popped into your head, but had you been debating the theme of loneliness within your life for a while, or was it right after that conversation on the bus that just made you want to start exploring it more?
It's definitely something I've been debating for a while, and I really wanted to create something in order to share that and be able to talk to other people about it. I think that people have a tendency to get kind of closed in with their art and not feel comfortable sharing it, and I really wanted to find a way to share it in a way that people would feel comfortable.
And what would your advice be for young artists new to Montreal attempting to host their own events or partake in an event?
I think just to not be afraid to ask people for favors. I at first felt really intimidated asking people for their art, especially when I wasn't able to pay anyone. I ended up just giving them each a zine. But I talked to a bunch of different venues, and I ended up being able to use the space that I did for free just from talking to people and trying to create good relationships with different artists and different venues. So that would be my advice, would be just, you know, talk to lots of people, share your ideas, and don't be afraid.
And lastly, do you plan on hosting any more events similar to this one?
I hope to. I would really like to do another zine now that I've kind of seen how this one worked out and now that I know the process a little bit better. When I first started this, I didn't even know how to use Adobe Illustrator, so I feel like it's been a great learning experience, and I'd really like to take that knowledge and create something else with it. So hopefully, yeah.
All right, well, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Of course. It's been a pleasure.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print. Once again, that was Maya Sharon. We hope you enjoyed that interview. Hopefully it gave you a new perspective on loneliness, thinking of time alone as an opportunity for healing and self-growth. We're going to play a couple of tunes, but don't go anywhere because we'll be right back. That was Topograph by Corridor. You're listening to Unfit to Print on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Thanks for tuning in this week. Much appreciated. Come back next week at the same time for another show. Once again, we want to thank Maya Sharon and Professor Curtis for speaking with us. We'll see you all next week. Playing us out, we have Signs by Sori.
Today is Tuesday, October the 15th, and welcome to our episode of Nipivut on CKUT 90.3 FM. Okay, on today's show, what do we have? We have an interview with Itwa Snowball and Malaya Hanuk Chapman from the movie